today we're going to see a protocol, a very simple protocol of relativistic quantum information. Now, the implementation here is not going to be very relativistic because I'm going to tell you the simplest model where this works. It's a protocol that was born in the context of QFT, and we can discuss that, if not today, on Monday. I already booked the room, by the way. It's going to be this room as well, time room. So quantum energy teleportation was a protocol that was conceived by Professor Masahiro Hota. He's at Tohoku University in Japan, in Sendai. Now, what I'm going to present you here is what is called minimal QET. So it's the simplest possible QET protocol that you can think of. And the simplest protocol is going to be, we have two qubits. We have Alice that has access to measuring qubit A and a phone line to Bob. Bob can receive the information about any measurement that Alice does, and then Bob can implement local operations on B. Those are the tools, okay? We also have a Hamiltonian between the two qubits that I wrote here. I wrote as the sum of two local terms and an interaction term, okay? The free Hamiltonians are of the form sigma z plus some multiple of the identity. You see the local Hamiltonians are sigma z. H is the energy gap. Well, if you want, half the energy gap. Double the energy gap. No, it's double the energy gap, exactly. So the energy gap will be double this, that's what I mean. Half the energy gap between the ground states and the first excitation of these free Hamiltonians. And then you have an interaction of the form sigma x, sigma x. Key point is the interaction does not commute with the free Hamiltonians. Okay? Now, we added multiples of the identity. Keep in mind that this is just for mathematical nicety. This works no matter that. Obviously, a multiple of the identity in finite dimensions is nothing. It's just a change of the origin of potential. Agreed? Are we fine with that? This is just again. So things are nice mathematically, a little bit nicer when we compute. Make sense? All right. So H and K, you see that K is the coupling strength. H are the, if you want, the free energies of the, or the energy gap of the two qubits. Now, with these choices, we can find the ground state of this full Hamiltonian, and the ground state is this. Okay, as you can tell, the ground state is an entangled state, which is unsurprising. Again, we have an interaction Hamiltonian that does not commute with the free Hamiltonian. So in the basis, in the local basis, 0 and 1, there's an entangled state. Because this is a relativistic quantum information protocol, we use the usual convention for relativistic quantum information, where we call 0 the negative eigenvalue of sigma z. The reason is that means that the 0 state is the ground state for the local ones. You see, state 0 is the ground state for this Hamiltonian. State 1 is the excited state for this Hamiltonian, which makes more sense than calling 0 the excited state and 1 the ground state. That could turn people mad. If you think about it, because why you call the ground state 0 and the excited state 0 and the ground state 1? That defies all logic. Make sense, everybody? So bear with me, because that's the convention we use here. Okay? I hope you understand the logic. Like, it's madness to call 0 the excited state and 1 the ground state. Hopefully, if you combine it with quantum fields, in which you call the vacuum 0, and so on. Okay? All right. So there are going to be several steps. I wrote a little circuit here. What's going to happen is that A is going to do a projective measurement. We're going to do it with the ground state that is entangled. A is going to carry out a projective measurement on the local qubit. A is going to send the bit of classical information obtained from that measurement to B, and B is going to apply a unitary that will depend on that information that's received. Okay?
H and K?
Constants, positive constants. Is that what you mean?
Okay, just constants?
Well, this is half the energy gap between the, if you don't have the interaction in mind, just the free Hamiltonians, H is half the energy gap in here, and K is the coupling strength between the two, if you want to interpret them physically. Make sense, everybody? Okay. So we're going to do this step one. Step one is Alice is going to carry out a projective measurement. This protocol is going to be, we're going to be using this protocol, not single shot. We're going to do it many times. And we're going to see how much energy we can extract or teleport, rather, out of doing it many times.
course, you could do a single shot, but we're going to do it statistically many times, okay?
Okay. So Alice is going to measure sigma x, and the measurement will provide
a bit of information. If you measure sigma x for Alice, you're getting plus or minus 1. Make sense?
Now, after measurement, Alice has to update the state. And how does Alice update the state? Well, if the measurement is ideal, it will be a projective measurement. Do you need a projective measurement for the protocol? The answer is no. You can do, obviously, a POVM. Well, obviously, you can do with POVMs, but this is the simplest case. This is the simplest. We're going to assume that Alice carries out a projective measurement. Make sense? All right, so in a single shot, after the measurement, the original state of the full system, that was the ground state, gets updated as applying a projector and renormalizing. State update for projective measurements. Make sense? All right, so this is doing it a single shot. So if Alice were to repeat this statistically on many copies of the system, let's see, ensemble-wise, so they repeat the protocol many times, let's compute what Alice would get. So row one, which is the row after the first step, is going to be a sum of the updated states, right? Weighted, a convex combination, a classical probability distribution of the state that she would get weighted by the probability that she gets it. Okay? As we discussed for density operators. Let's write it. This would be sum alpha equals plus minus 1, probability A alpha, psi PM alpha, psi PM alpha. Agreed? So this is just alpha equals plus minus 1 PA alpha G P alpha. Okay. Everybody understands that? All that we are doing is statistically doing this many times. All right? Or rather, you could think of it differently. You could think that Alice does the projective measurement, and you, the person describing the experiment, has no idea of what the result is. So you get a mixed state, which is a probability distribution over possible outcomes with the probability of each outcome. Make sense? Okay. Now, this is the first step. We should, here, it is very important that we assess the energy cost of the protocol. So we need to talk about the energy cost of this step. How much does Alice spend in measuring the system? Because, of course, it's going to cost you, right? This is the ground state. Whatever you do to it, you're going to excite it. All right, so let's compute the energy cost. E of the projective measurement is the trace of rho 1 h. And that's going to be sum alpha equals plus minus 1 g pa h pa. Well, pa alpha. Okay. So let's compute that, the energy cost of the projective measurement. So maybe, yeah, we can call it E1, rather, which is the energy cost, the average energy cost of step one. Make sense? All right. So that's equal to, maybe I could turn it up a bit. That's equal to some alpha equals plus minus 1 of, you can decompose it in 3, g pa. If you have questions, please do ask. Huh? Yeah. Don't feel bad about asking. It's finding the ground state of this Hamiltonian. Diagonalize this Hamiltonian, you find that's the ground state. Make sense? Not a definition, it's the ground state of this full Hamiltonian.
Okay.
Okay? And in fact, you can prove, rather, if you don't want to diagonalize the whole thing, but it's a 2 by 2 It's a 4x4 matrix, right? It's not difficult to diagonalize, but you don't want to. You can easily prove that the expectation value on each of them is zero, and also that this is a positive operator as written. So yeah, that's the ground state. Make sense? All right. You can decompose it in parts like this. I'm not gonna write the of alpha here, but hopefully you know. Alpha equals plus minus one. Then you have G, PA, HB, PA, G, plus of course the interaction term, G, PA, V, PA, G. Okay. So far, so good. Now, we know that PA alpha commutes with V, and PA alpha also commutes with HB. Agreed? You can just look at PA. It's a sigma x, of course, commutes with sigma x. And it's also an operator on A. It's identity for B. So of course, it commutes with HB. Make sense? Because of that, we know already that this is going to be 0. OK, so all that survives is the local part. Make sense, everybody? Clear?
What happened?
Can you be louder, please? Sorry. What happened with what?
Why are these two terms zero?
Commutation.
Oh, right.
And this. Make sense?
PA times PA is not one.
Agreed.
It's just PA.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I made a mistake. They are not zero, that's my bad. That's my bad. I'm gonna prove to you, huh? So I'm gonna actually prove it to you. I'm not gonna say zero directly. So let's evaluate alpha equals plus one, plus minus one, G, PA, HB, I'll do it very fast. PA, so what is that? That is the sum, alpha equals plus minus one of, yeah, that's right, of G, HB, PA, right? That's what you were telling me.
Yeah.
Great, so this thing, what is that? This is 1/2 sum alpha equals plus minus one of the following. G, HB, G, plus alpha, G, HB, sigma x, A, G. Agreed? Substituting P. This is certainly zero. Agreed? And then this one is also zero because G, HB, sigma x, acting on G, is of course proportional to G, sigma B, said sigma xa on G, which is also zero. Okay.
What about another term that is G sigma xg? Because HB has identity in it as well. FH and K times identity.
And so sigma x would take one state out of the diagonal, and therefore the expectation value is zero. Make sense? Now, if you get a completely different result in terms of algebra with the multiple of the identity, something's wrong, because the multiple of the identity shouldn't do anything. Make sense, everybody? Okay, so true, the two terms are zero, but you needed a little bit of proof. Well,
with V, let's do V. V is also zero, but let's prove it as well.
So let me write it here still. Let's prove it. And for V, yeah.
sum alpha equals plus minus 1 of G PA V PA G that's equal to alpha equals plus minus 1. And we have, this is two parts, same as before, G V PA G plus, no, that's the same thing, of course, equals two parts, sum alpha equals plus minus 1, GV, GE, which of course is 0 because of that board, plus alpha GV sigma XA, okay, G. And, well, it's two sigma x's, so you know what's going to happen. But anyway, so this is equal to 0 because g v sigma x, g is proportional to g sigma x b. Well, I didn't write sigma x a here.
Right.
Sigma x a, sigma like that, and that's equal to 0
for the same reasons as before. Okay, all that it does is taking things out of the diagonal, nothing survives. Out of the diagonal for one of them. Make sense? All right, so that means that the energy of the first step, energy cost of the first step, on average, which is the trace of rho 1, h, technically, minus the trace of the original state at h as well, but we know it's 0. The energy of the initial state is 0. Agreed? So, minus 0, let me write it here. That's equal to, I'll write something so you understand. So that would be the initial state, ground, h. And of course, this is 0, right? That's the energy cost of the thing. So this is sum alpha equals plus minus 1. G PA alpha HA PA alpha G, and this is 1/2 sum alpha equals plus minus 1 of the following G V, oh sorry, my bad, G H. Well, the P, sorry. G, P, A, I have that. Well, actually, we can actually do already what it is. So the result of this, if you apply this projector on G, the result of that is literally the F that you have, F, H, K, larger than 0. Yeah. That makes sense, everybody? Now, notice that if I don't have the F, the ground state would have been negative energy, and the excited state would have been higher energy. You still get F of HK0 as the energy difference. So the difference is that this would not be 0. So even though it looks like this depends on F, it doesn't. If F wasn't there, it's basically a shift of all the energy levels and by the same amount. Make sense? So the delta is the same. That makes sense? And this is why it's so convenient to add the multiples of the identity there, so this doesn't get in the calculations in between. Make sense, everybody? All right, so you see, again, very important. Even though it may look like it depends on F, it doesn't. It's just a constant energy shift of the whole system, the F. So the result will still be the F. By that, I don't mean that doesn't depend on the F, but I mean it seems that it may depend on adding the F as a multiple of the identity. That's not true. You will get this result, this F, no matter what. Okay? Good, good, good. So, step two. Classical communication. And local unitary on B. So in step two, Bob receives the information, alpha, which is one bit of information, either plus or minus 1, and Bob is going to apply the following unitary.
Bob applies UV of alpha cosine theta identity minus I alpha sine theta sigma BY.
Yep. This is for demonstration purposes. There are many unitaries that he could apply that would satisfy what we want, but this is just a simple one. Make sense? All right. We can compute what the value. So in fact, I'm going to fix theta. I'm going to fix theta to satisfy this for my purposes. Okay. And of course, I'm just fixing it. This is a decision I make because I want to, okay, to fix theta to be that. In fact, you can fix just one of them and the other one comes out of it, but whatever. You have both of them there. Make sense? Alrighty, so let's do first in a single shot experiment what happens at every single shot, and then let's see the statistical mixture that you get when you repeat it many times. In a single shot, you get UB, depending on alpha, acting on the projective state, psi PM, that's the state after Alice measured. And this would be 1 over root P alpha, PA alpha UB PA alpha ground state. In a single shot, which means that in an ensemble of experiments, or in other words, in a single shot, if you don't know what was alpha as you're describing the experiment, same thing, you get that rho 2, the second step, it's equal to sum alpha equals plus minus 1 u B alpha, PA alpha, G, PA alpha, UB alpha dagger. All right, makes sense. So you're applying the unitary B, value alpha, weighted with the probability of having obtained alpha, which is the same that is already factored in the state. Make sense, everybody? Very nice. So now what we need to compute is the energy cost of the second step. How much energy doing UB, which is a local operation on B, is going to cost. I want to finish the calculation soon because most of this is going to be discussion after we see the result. So maybe I'm going a bit fast, but those all calculations are easily repeatable. Right? It's just arithmetics. All right.
One question. Yeah. Assume that f of h and k is for E1.
Sorry, assume what?
Bigger than zero?
Assume what, sorry?
F of h and k.
Yeah.
Did you assume that that's?
Oh. I gave it to you.
Oh.
This is not any f of hk. This is an h of k that I chose.
Okay.
In fact, what the result tells you is that the energy difference after the first step is h squared divided by root h squared plus k squared. And then you look at that and say, oh, the calculations were a bit nasty. It would be much simpler if I shift everything by this amount.
Okay.
You see, how you do it in practice, you don't put the identity here. You do it. And then you find the first step, the energy gap is this, the energy cost. Mm-hmm. Or let me shift this in this particular way to make it nicer. That's all. It's just the calculation to be simpler. So you get all these things to be zero. It's going to be important when we do the discussions about, because you see, otherwise, you have to talk about local energy. What is local energy? It makes no sense because you have an interaction Hamiltonian too. So some people would say local energy is the H, given by HA, but not true, because you also have operators of A in the local part. Things are way cleaner if you have this.
So the second part is arbitrary. You chose it because it's nicer.
That's right. It's just a nicety that we add to the problem to be able to solve it easily and discuss it easily. Make sense? Again, adding a multiple of the identity should have no effect on physics. There's only one of the fundamental interactions that cares about that stuff, perhaps. And we are not talking about that one here. Make sense? All right. All right, so the cost of the second step, let's call it 2, is the following. Trace of row 2, h, minus trace of row 1, h. Or in other words, is trace of row 2, h, minus e1. Agreed? All right. So let's compute trace of row h, trace of row 2, h, right? And that's all that is left to compute. Should I start here? Yeah, I'll start here. All right, trace of row 2 h. This is going to be sum alpha equals plus minus 1 g p a alpha u b dagger alpha h u b. I'm going to omit the alpha dependence in no time because it's writing a lot. All right. And again, you can decompose it in three terms. There's going to be alpha equals plus minus 1, and then you get g pa ub dagger ha ub pa on the ground. You also have g pa ub dagger hb ub pa g, and of course the interaction term g pa ub dagger v ub pa ground. All right, so let's evaluate it. So the first thing we notice, is that UB, UB alpha commutes with HA. So that means that for the first amount, alpha equals plus minus 1 of g pa ub dagger ha ub pa g. This is just sum alpha equals plus minus 1 g pa ha pa g. And if you remember, well, you don't need to remember because it's somewhere here. That's literally E1. You see it from there? It's exactly the same term as E1. So this thing is E1. Very convenient because we're going to be subtracting it. So it's good that one of the terms gives me that. Question? Yeah?
Why do we, I should have asked this sooner, why do we sum over alpha all the time? Because
probability distribution, you see?
When Alice measures, it's over.
But you imagine you don't know it. Or you have many experiments. You can think of it two ways. You have many experiments. We're doing the process many times. We want to see if on average, it would be very unfair to do it once. Because to do it once, sure, you may get an expectation value, whatever, but also fluctuations are big, you know? So you may have caught a big fluctuation of energy, positive energy, or maybe a negative one in single-shot experiments. If you want to compare with an experimental process, you better do it many times.
But then why is it called a single-shot experiment?
No, no, it's not called a single-shot experiment. I'm writing what would happen in a single shot, and then I build what happens in the experiment by weighting the result of every single shot with the probability of it happening. You can think of it of also, I keep insisting on that because it's a quantum info course. This is the same description you have for the state if you do it only once, but nobody tells you the value of the outcome, and you don't know what they've been doing. So you describe it with this density operator. Make sense? Either or. All right, nice. So we have the first demand. The first demand is E1, which is something very convenient because you're going to subtract it. So nice, good math. Okay. I'm going to switch boards. All right, so we know that the energy of 2 is actually equal, let me just repeat it here, trace of rho 2 h minus trace of rho 1 h, which again, remember that this is the trace of rho 2 h b plus u plus v. Okay, we have canceled the E1 with the E1 that we obtained with the HA term that's not there. Okay, now a little trick. This is equal, let me first write it. This is equal to G PA UB dagger HB plus V U B P A acting on the ground. Did I write it right? P A U B H B E B P A. Yeah. But we can cancel this one if we want. And we have used that for that, that PA commute with HB. And PA also commutes with B. All right, so PA can jump, no problem.
Does it commute with the unitary operators?
No.
So how did you get rid of it?
So what have I done? So you have that row, then you write the row. Beep, 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 beep. Let me think about it. PPA. So this is a cyclic thing though anyway. So you can substitute row 2. Where's row 2? I don't have row 2 here. Row 2 is like that, and you get the trace. Yeah, you're right on that. Yeah, maybe you can't. Sorry. PA. It doesn't matter that much for what I want to tell you, because I'm going to give you the result of doing the arithmetics. So. E2 is actually going to be equal to minus 1 h squared plus k squared. I need to think about it twice. Yeah, you cannot. UB is of the form. Oh, PA does commute with UB, right? Because PA is an operator on A and UB is an operator on B. So I'm just stupid. Sorry. Well. Of course it does. Let me write it here. All right, makes sense. I didn't write that one on my notes because it's trivial, but then I am more trivial than the combination I didn't write. I'm sorry about that. All right, so the result that you get is this. HK sine 2 theta minus H squared
plus 2k squared 1 minus cosine 2 theta. Sorry, I don't do the arithmetics. I can leave them to you to do, but I promise this. I've actually done it with Mathematica, so I'm 100% sure he's right. Now, this is the result of, this is the energy cost of step 2. Now, the question is whether this thing can be negative or not, but you can see it can, actually, because for 0, theta much smaller than 1 already, you can do a series expansion of that and see right away that the cost, energy cost of 2 is approximately equal to minus 2 h k theta divided by h squared plus k squared, which is less than 0. OK, makes sense, everybody? So this is, we're going to do a couple of analysis here and discussion. This is the math of the minimal QET model. Let's analyze what we've done so far. We have an experiment repeated many times, right, where you are in B, and you really want to extract energy. Your problem is that you have the ground state of a system, right? So you cannot really extract energy from the ground state of a system. Maybe you are lucky, and when you do something to it, you're going to catch a fluctuation of negative energy, and therefore you get energy. Maybe you're unlucky, and you're going to catch a negative one. You have to pay. On average, ideally, you get zero and or more, right? On average, you cannot decrease the energy of the ground state. So whatever you do to the ground state on its own can't extract energy. Make sense? That would be zero-point energy extraction. The ground state is a passive state. You cannot extract energy on local, or it's local passive, strong local passive, actually. You cannot do anything locally to increase energy. However, if somebody measures the state somewhere and gives you information about that measurement, like Alice did here, now local operations on B using that information can be clever so that on average they extract energy. Make sense? Now, several questions arrive. It's like, hold on.
Information is energy?
No, information is not energy. It's just
because if you want to extract energy, you need
a bit of information, yeah.
So it's kind of like the information.
You use the energy, let me put it like that. You're activating, imagine this is not the ground state. So not to add another controversial layer that we will discuss in a second. Imagine it's not a ground state, imagine it's a thermal state. And you cannot extract energy on average from a thermal state locally either. So Alice is sending you information about what to do to B, and with that information, you activate it. The energy is coming from the thermal state, not from the information. The information enables you to activate the passive state. Make sense? Let me give a picture that is not accurate, but it's very nice. The picture is, imagine that you have a harmonic oscillator. Sorry. When that happens. Harmonic oscillator in the ground state. And this is a phase space, right? So the phase space distribution of it, this is Q if you want, this is P, is some Gaussian state center at zero in phase space. Imagine that you displace it. So Alice makes a measurement, and that measurement displaces it to some coherent state. What is this going to start to do? Like, it's going to start rotating. Imagine now that Bob's arrives, and Bob says, OK, I'm going to do an operation to that state that gets it closer to the ground state and gives me energy. Well, if you have no clue of what happened, you start pushing randomly, and it's going to cost you, actually, on average. But if Alice tells you what Alice did at what time, now you know when to wait to push in the right direction and get it back. So this is inaccurate, obviously. It's not what we're doing here. But that's the spirit. See what I mean? Right. With information about what Alice did, you can try to get the state closer to the ground state, rather. But the fun part here is that the classical, in this model, there's no fundamental speed limits, right? So Alice can communicate the outcome of the measurement immediately, as fast as you want. So somebody may argue, hold on, isn't this two things? What if Alice doesn't, you must be cheating. What if Alice doesn't communicate the outcome? Can Bob extract energy or not? Let's prove that it can't, actually. Let's do that. And second, how do you know the energy is not traveling from A to B? Because Alice is definitely depositing energy. And in fact, you can prove always that E1 is actually larger than E2 in absolute value. So the energy that Alice puts in is going to be more than the energy that E extracts, right? So how do you know that it's not that Alice did something here? It propagated through the interaction, right? It's two imagine harmonic oscillators propagating through the coupling, and then B is receiving that. How do you know this is true teleportation and not just energy transmission? Make sense? Those are the two things we're going to calculate now, right? So first, the first one, meaning like Can Bob extract energy just because Alice did something to the ground state? You see the naive expectation. It's like, well, it's no longer the ground state. Therefore, maybe Bob can extract energy because Alice made it no longer the ground state. So maybe the communication step is bogus. You don't need it. It's just, you know, that you just excited it. Well, I guess in quantum mechanics, you could have that question. If this were QFT, where this was born, you cannot ask that question. That makes sense? Because any local action will propagate at the speed of light at most. But anyway, let's ask this question here. What if Alice just raised the energy of the ground state, and that's what Bob is seeing, and the communication bit is not needed to extract energy? Can you prove that that's not the case? And I can. Let's do it.
Why is it in the case in QFT, you're saying because
Because a local action can never propagate. So if you are B and you see in the ground state, the vacuum, if A does something, you will not be able to see what A has done until light reaches you.
Yeah,
but we will discuss it. Don't worry.
By the way,
we will discuss it, how this works in QFT. But for now, let me be free of the chains of having to comply with causality just to explain the experiment, and then we talk about the implications. That's also why I booked a room on Monday as well, in case we don't finish with that. All right. So, impossibility of energy extraction without classical info exchange. All right. So we are going to do the same protocol, but now Bob doesn't know alpha. Agreed? Bob can do any unitary Bob wants, any, but doesn't know alpha. Let's do it. So Bob is going to do, Bob will apply in step two the following. WB. Which is a local unitary that is alpha independent. Okay? So let's just re-update step two. And in step two, you get that Bob does applying this to the state psi pm. Or in other words, 1 over root pa alpha wa pa alpha on the ground. So yeah, sometimes Bob may get lucky, but let's see what happens when this is repeated many times. Let's do an ensemble now. Let's see what the difference is. Okay. So rho two now is gonna be WB, rho one, WB with probability one. You see the difference? Let me write the expression and then we see the other expression and compare. WB alpha equals plus minus one. P alpha G P alpha and W B dagger. The difference is that these U's can come out of the sum. They don't depend on alpha anymore. See what I mean? The U comes out of the sum. That's the difference. That's the only difference. U does not depend on alpha. All right, nice. So we have that. So if we repeat the calculation, we obtain the following. For the energy balance, we obtain the energy cost of WB, let's call it this, to distinguish from step two, is trace of rho 2 H, which is the same, minus the trace of rho 2 H1, rho 1, sorry, H. And this is not, I call it rho 2, whatever. Okay? And the calculation is sum alpha G P A alpha W B dagger H B plus V W B ground. All right, same as before. It's literally the same as before. However, we know that, and the only dependence on alpha here is on P. Agreed? So this is the spectral decomposition of identity. This sum contains the spectral decomposition of identity. And that means that EW B, it's equal to trace rho 2H minus EPA, so E1. So the E1, yeah, what I'm getting is the following. I don't really need this, actually. I can just do it with the previous step. It's G WB dagger H plus V WB ground. Okay. Now, let's notice that's the energy cost. Now, the question is whether that can be negative or not. Well, let's see. So we know that HA and WB this is HA, sorry. What do I have here? This is HB. That's definitely zero, sir. I don't care about that much. I also know that G, because this is zero, I can have an H WBG. This is also equal to zero, right? Do you see that? W is a unitary. Okay, so perfect. This is the same as GHA, which is zero by the construction we have. And then we can write the following equality. I can add, if I want, I can add HA here for free because I know it's zero. Let me do it. Some of my favorite steps in quantum mechanics, and also in relativity, is doing nothing to things, but doing nothing in that kind of way. So let's do nothing to it. EWB, it's equal to GWB dagger. And then I have here the full Hamiltonian, HWBG. Okay. Make sense? But this is nice, because I know with my construction that H is a positive operator. Remember that I told you at the beginning? H is a positive operator. What's the definition of positive operator? Who can tell me? Is that? That's true. Another definition? The expectation on, for a complex vector, for a complex Hilbert space, the expectation on any vector has to be positive, or well, positive semi-definite. So we know that this thing is going to be always equal or larger than zero. Therefore, no, Bob cannot extract energy from the ground state, no matter what Alice does to it, what the projective measurement gives Alice, if the alpha is not communicated to Bob, no matter what W is. Make sense?
If Bob did it just once, and I know this is not a...
But this is the expectation over many times, yeah.
If you got lucky for that,
sure.
Just that one.
You see, that would be unfair, meaning that would be cheating for me if I do it once. Because once, sure, once you can have, you can catch a fluctuation and go. I would tell you, well, yeah, if I do the experiment, cheating experimentally, not in theory. Cheating, if you cheat, right, you're going to be like, if you do it experimentally and you cheat, I do it once, look, negative energy. Well, how do you know that's not a fluctuation? Do it many times on average, please. Make sense? Yeah, yeah. To be more conservative, you need to do it on an ensemble of experiments. Sure, you can do it in one and get energy out too.
Can you also not guess a unitary operator that...
Well, that depends on you.
I'm just saying, is that possible to... Well, it's not possible.
No, no, if you don't, that's what I just proved. Yeah. If it doesn't depend on alpha, there's no way. So the communication is important. It's important to take the result seriously. So it is not that A is increasing the energy so that Bob gets it. You know what I mean? That's not what's happening. Another question you may ask is, okay, is it then that A is putting energy into the system and the energy is traveling to B and B grabs it, but then unless he knows how it was put, that would be this, you see, that's what this is misleading. That requires information to extract the energy, but really it would be unfair to call it teleportation. This is more, right, the energy has made it to Bob and now Bob can extract it with the right information, see? But that's not what we're saying happening here. What we're saying here is that Bob still sees locally. This is, the communication is so fast that Bob locally still sees the ground state. Hasn't had time to realize, right? We are saying that. We are claiming that. And therefore, Bob is really extracting energy from what looks like the local ground state.
Let's just do a little discussion on this.
I have one thing. After Ellie's measurement, it's not a null state anymore.
Correct.
So why can you say
that? I'm about to discuss that, yeah. It is not the ground state, but think for example of the following. You are in a lattice of harmonic oscillators and you're looking here. And somebody 1,000 kilometers away does something. And that something, of course, will eventually propagate to you at the speed of sound. But you will take a while to notice. You won't see it immediately. It will take some time for that energy to propagate to you, right?
No,
that's not what I mean. What I mean is this. The perturbation that you do has to propagate. So if you're saying, think instead of Hamiltonians, think of a Hamiltonian density, okay? The local energy density here has not changed. It will take a while to change. See what I mean? It will take the speed of sound to actually time. Well, we're going to compute it right now, that, actually.
I think we have to add the time evolution of this thing.
Correct. I'm about to do it. Okay. All right? That's what I'm going to do. We're going to see time evolution. The thing is that communication could be arbitrarily fast, much faster than the speed of sound in the medium. All right, that's what I'm going to say. You can communicate much faster than a perturbation will make it from when Alice does the thing to here. If you visualize the energy, Alice, the energy density, let's plot the energy density. If you plot it, Alice does the thing, and it's going to be a lump here where Alice does it. And that lump is going to propagate towards B at the speed of sound. Make sense? Now, if the classical channel is much faster than the speed of sound, for B, it's like nothing has happened. If B were to do local measurements here, cannot distinguish it from the vacuum until the signal arrives.
The state is already changed.
No, let's see the time evolution. So you change it only locally, that's the point. The operation is only on A, and then to propagate to the system B, those are two physical systems, joined by a spring or whatever you want, it takes a while for the energy to go from A to B. Let's see how much. Yeah. I run out of boards, I didn't want to erase. Natural energy flow from A to B. All right, so we want the expectation value of HB of T, and also the expectation value of V of T, right? The local energy density at B will have contributions from both. Agreed? Everybody, the interaction energy and the free energy, if you want to call it that. Make sense? All right, so if we compute V first, is the easiest, plus minus 1, g pa e to the I h t. Luckily, this is a time-independent Hamiltonian, so very easy to evolve it in time. V e to the minus I h t, using the Heisenberg picture, which is the best picture ever, as probably you know by now, right? We can discuss it if you disagree. All right, this. Oh, that's really nice. If you compute it, you get that this is zero. Okay? So, in the end, this is going to do nothing. The time evolution with the full Hamiltonian is going to do nothing in it. Again, you need to compute it, but it's zero, I promise. I'm just running out of time and I want to discuss things. Let's compute this one. This one is not zero. You see, that's why I chose the multiple of the identity to make it super clean, this thing. The analysis. Well, I didn't choose it. Masahiro Hota chose it, okay? And HB, what is that? So this is G, very similar, sum over alpha. And then you get G, PA, e to the IHT, HB, e to the minus IHT, PA, G. And if you compute that, sorry not for not doing the details, this is f of hk, 1 minus the cosine of 4k. Well, unsurprisingly, when the coupling strength is 0, this is 0. And the speed at which the speed, if you want, speed of energy propagation is proportional to 1 over k. It's inverse proportional to the coupling. That makes sense? T, obviously missing the T. My bad. Okay, so the energy at B starts being zero, and it starts increasing at a rate that is 1 over the coupling strength. The time it takes, sorry, the speed.
time. The time it takes for the energy to propagate. And the time scale of energy propagation from A to B. Now, of course, at any instant right after, it's going to be some energy propagation. But you just take your classical channel to be much faster than K, all right? And that means that the energy you extract cannot have come because I can make arbitrarily small the energy that is transmitted from A to B in this case. Super simple when relativity is not bothering you. Make sense? Everybody? So let's talk now. Calculations are done. Let's talk about what we just did.
What if K is on the order of, what if the time that it takes is of the order of the time
well,
that
my whole calculation, my whole calculation assumes that the communication channel is instantaneous as compared to that scale. You see, I never did time evolution in here. Uh-huh. So I did the calculation assuming the classical channel is faster, or rather that the energy cannot propagate from A to B in the time that it takes for to do that. Now, let's look again. And I know that you're thinking about fields, and we will talk about fields, I promise. But let's analyze what we did in quantum mechanics. Assumption here, the communication channel and the implementation of the unitary is much faster than this. OK, that's the assumption. You have the speed of sound. And for example, you have a lattice with some speed of sound, and you use the speed of light to communicate. How about that? Which is much faster than the speed of sound in a set of springs, if you want. OK, then you can do this. Now, the cool thing that we've done here is that we start from the ground state. Alice makes a measurement here, and of course modifies, there's no longer the ground state. However, in the surroundings of Bob, Bob cannot tell. If Bob now does tomography of the state of the system he has access to, he would say, yeah, it's the ground state. It's indistinguishable from the ground state because the action of Alice has not propagated yet to Bob. Make sense? It takes a while. And yet, with the information received from Alice, he knows how to poke the local ground state, or what looks like the ground state locally, how to poke it to extract energy. So of course, you're not violating anything, energy conservation or any crackpottery that you do often, that you receive letters from people saying, you know, I got zero point energy extraction. That's not it. But it's activation of zero point energy locally that costs you. That's why you cannot cheat it. Alice pays the price. It's a collect call, in a way. Alice is paying the price of whatever Bob obtains here. And Alice has to create actually more positive energy. My mind goes to other things. Alice has to spend more energy than Bob can extract. All right? That's what we've seen. And we have proven that the communication bit, so two arguments that were saying, no, it's not cheating. It's not that Alice is raising the energy of the system and Bob is receiving that energy. No, it's not that. We gave you two arguments, right? The argument number one is that, well, if Bob doesn't have the info is important. Without the info, there's no way. And second, this can be much faster than the speed that it takes for the energy to propagate. In fact, the perturbation that Alice makes to propagate to B. So far, so good with the minimal QET model. Now, I thought it was a question. Sorry. Yeah. Now, this is very cool for the implications it has. It's very cool in itself. Masahiro, let me tell you the history of this. Masahiro Hota was trying to do things related to entanglement measures in QFT because it's complicated, as you probably may imagine. You've seen finite dimensions and so on, and you saw already that it's complicated. And Masahiro Hota was thinking of entanglement in the black hole evaporation problem, in the black hole information problem. And he thought, right, we know that there's going to be negative energy densities around the black hole, so perhaps the presence of entanglement between partner modes, it's related somehow. I mean, my apologies to Masahiro if I'm misrepresenting. Okay, this is me, my understanding of what inspired Masahiro, which is, you know, limited in that sense. Then he said, well, negative energy densities may be related to entanglement. Perhaps in QFT we can associate negative energy densities, somehow processes that can create negative energy densities, to entanglement. It's a really great idea. If you think about how people create negative energy densities before QET, those are typically very entangled states. You get accelerated mirrors with a lot of entanglement creation, or breakdown rather. So he was thinking that maybe negative energy was related to it. So he thought, okay, the first thing to prove, if you're going to use negative energy as some sort of measure of entanglement, is that it cannot increase under LOCC. And then he finds that he can. And he's like, oh, no, hold on, what? And then he finds that there's LOCC protocols. There's an LOCC protocol, local operation classical communication, that can create negative energy densities. And okay, maybe I can use this to extract energy. That was Masahiro's thinking. All right, so the first example of this happened in QFT. And in QFT, all the questions that you were having, hold on, but what Alice does propagates at the speed of light and so on, right?
So you cannot really say that information arrives earlier. It depends, right? If it's a massive field, sure, you can do it. With a big mass, no problem. But if it's a massive massless field, information will propagate at the same time as the perturbation, right? So what happened in that case? How do you know that it's QET? Look at what Masahiro did first. Masahiro first showed it in 1+1 dimensions, free scalar field, flat spacetime. That's very nice, because in that spacetime, in that the Klein-Gordon solutions can be decoupled into left moving modes and right moving modes, and they don't talk to each other. So Masahiro said, Alice is going to measure only left moving modes, and Bob is to the right of Alice. So what the perturbation of Alice only goes to the left. And the information travels with a different channel, it's in a different field or whatever, different channel, communicates to B. He doesn't have to care about the propagation of the perturbation to Bob because it never propagates to Bob. And then Bob does the measurement, and Bob shows that he can extract energy out of it. That was the first paper, if I'm remembering correctly, that was the first paper, I think 2005, but don't quote me on this. And the community took a while to believe it. Like, it was received with disbelief, let's put it like that. Starting from the referee to everybody else. Until it takes a while. Those things, when they're very, it's funny because they're simple but groundbreaking, but it's suspiciously close to extraction of zero-point energy. Yeah, people are going to distrust it at the beginning. It took years for Masahiro to be recognized with this. I'm running out of time. You can erase, I think, if you want, yeah. Let's see the following. So in QFT, of course, you can do it in higher dimensions, and it's kind of cool because that allows you. So, for example, my focus on this lately has been on designing stress energy densities that have particular characteristics with this protocol. And in particular, designing exotic matter stress energy densities that you can use for that. You can use this to violate energy conditions in relativity. Now, you can do it even in 3D, even if you cannot decouple left movers and right movers, and you get the energy at the same time, the energy front at the same time as the information, you can still get negative energy densities in the field with this protocol. I hope that was OK. I don't know. Is understood everything we did? Yeah. If you're going to ask how is that even possible, I don't know if I can answer, but let's try.
But so Alice is communicating that, okay, you should do this thing.
Yes.
But what I know is from my system has not arrived to you yet.
Correct.
But so when it arrives, you could do that. But he says, okay, I'm just going to do it right now.
You know why? And this is a really good question, actually. For a non-familiar question, it's really good. Because I haven't told you what resource is being used here. Entanglement. The ground state is entangled. So let me give you, again, as we go waving hands, become inaccurate. But excuse me for this. Alice is measuring locally. And Alice measures, if you want, something about the field. Mind the fluctuation spectrum of the field. But because the ground state is entanglement, fluctuations here are going to be correlated with fluctuations here. So the information that Alice gets about what's going on here will inform Bob about what's going on here because of the correlations that exist in the system. That entanglement is what permits the whole thing to work. If the ground state is not entangled, you would not be able to do it.
So when Alice manipulates its state because it's entangled instantaneously.
No action at a distance, please. When Alice manipulates, measures the states locally, she's learning information about B as well. And then that information that B receives, B can use to, if I knew nothing about my local state, then I couldn't do anything. But I know something because Alice has measured already and we had correlations. And I'm very purposefully talking about correlations because you can do this protocol with classical correlations too, not for ground states, obviously. But if you have a thermal state, you can use the classical correlation in the thermal state to do the same.
What if it's a ground state? How can someone...
Entangled. Entangled ground state, remember? Still there in the upper board. It's an entangled ground state.
Yeah.
That's it.
So Bob's state on its own is not a ground state?
What does that mean?
I don't exactly know.
So the problem is that when you have an interaction Hamiltonian that's non-local, like everywhere, like in QFT, it's non-local in space, if you want. Huh? If you have a Hamiltonian that is non-local, talking about what's the energy, if you can talk about densities, though. The energy density in Bob, let's see, HB plus V, the expectation is zero.
Right.
I agree. So it would be the ground state. I don't know. I mean, again, you tell me.
Isn't HB plus V also a positive Hermitian operator?
Correct.
So
the local ground state is
minimum energy.
Yeah.
So if you get if you get to negative energy, you have to bump something.
Oh, yeah. Local energy density, and that's the point. You the full Hamiltonian, you will never get with the full Hamiltonian negative energy. You will get positive. So the total process has an energy cost. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah, the total Hamiltonian.
Correct. But the local, so the densities can be negative, the total energy cannot. Huh. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why you can create exotic matter with this in QFT. Because you can get negative energy densities. All right. Yeah. You can compute the fluctuation, that's no problem, yeah. It depends on the state that you consider, right? And the different states will do different things. Again, it depends what you do. It's very dependent on the process, how the fluctuations behave. For example, you can do coherent excitations and minimize the fluctuations, or you can do states that are very squeezed and then maximize the fluctuations, up to you. Yeah. It depends a lot on what operation you do. Yeah. And QET is actually very robust. There are many ways of doing it. It's not just that you need to, this is cherry pick to be nice, but not cherry pick to work. That's very important. Yeah, question?
Why do we need Alice to do something? Like, is there a way to like?
No, that's what I proved there, right? Oh, well, not anymore.
And then he knows about his own system.
Yeah, but nobody, no, because the measure would cost Bob. You see, you need to keep it, you need to have the keep account of the thermodynamics of the whole process. If Bob measures first, he's going to have to pay energy. And he's injecting it locally. So maybe he gets some back, sure. But then it's not impressive. See what I mean? The energy is not coming from the ground state. So this is the way, the proper way to think about this is local activation of passive states through LOCC. You have a state that's passive, in this case, the ground state, which is the impressive bit. State that's passive, locally, you cannot extract energy from it. But because of entanglement in the ground state, if somebody else measures and gives you the information, you use that information to activate thermodynamically the state, and you can extract energy from it. If I were to tell you this story with thermal states, you wouldn't be as surprised, I think. Because yeah, thermal states, everybody knows to have energy. But ground states, though. See what I mean? But yeah, it does work for ground state. The resource consumed is not the energy in the system. The resource consumed is entanglement in the ground state.
I still don't understand why you can say extracted energy from the ground state. I feel like it's just doing.
I agree with you. You're not extracting literal energy from the ground state, but locally looks like the ground state. That's my point. So B has no way to tell if that's the ground state or not. Because for him, that's why I talk about densities, right? Yeah, if you want the ground state in terms of energy density, right? It's definitely zero energy density, renormalized to be the ground state. So yeah, there is no way that Bob can tell before the perturbation propagates that that's not the ground state. So it's local activation of the energy of the ground state. See, this is two physical, let's look at this problem. This is two physical systems, right? You have access to the degrees of freedom of A, access to the degrees of freedom of B. When you act on A, sure, you're racing, you're not in the ground state anymore. I fully agree. But Bob cannot tell. It looks, for all the observables of Bob, this is the ground state. I'm telling you, the perturbation takes a while to propagate. Let's go back to QFT. Bob is a macrocausal theory. Bob action Alice action cannot be felt by Bob until you get a light crossing time. Any local operations, any local elements of the local algebra of the field here, are going to commute with elements of the local algebra of the field here until the signal arrives. So certainly, anything that Alice does cannot be reflected here on B. Makes sense? So that's why I say for B is still, quote unquote, the ground state, meaning it's undistinguishable. It's like a vacuum decay. Hasn't reached you. You're still alive, even though you know you're doomed, right? Anyway.